Welcome to episode 4 of the Serious About Security podcast for April 2nd, 2012, brought to you by the Greater Lafayette Security Professionals Group and the Center for Education and Research in Information Assurance and Security, or SIRIUS, at Purdue University. Let me introduce the host of today's podcast. I'm Preston Wiley, CISSP, CCNA.
This is Keith Watson, Research Engineer at SIRIUS.
And I'm Mike Hill, CISSP.
So for announcements, this week is Symposium Week here at SIRIUS and Purdue University. And so on April 3rd and 4th, we'll hold our 13th Annual Information Security Symposium here on the campus of Purdue University in West Lafayette. This event will be held in the Lawson Computer Science Building, and the registration opens at 9:15 on Tuesday, April 3rd. So this year we have Arthur Caviglia Jr., the chairman of RSA, Security Division of EMC, as our opening keynote speaker. On Wednesday, Howard Schmidt, the Special Assistant to the President and Senior Director for Cybersecurity in the Office of the U.S. President, will give the keynote address on the Wednesday morning. The Security Fireside Chat was also moved to Wednesday so that Howard, Arthur, and Professor Spafford could all be part of that roundtable discussion. So that's only the minor agenda change that I'm aware of. So on April 4th, we'll have an opportunity for the students here at SIRIUS to highlight and discuss their research projects with the attendees and sponsors. There will be a Tech Talk poster preview in which students present their research projects in less than 60 seconds or so. And then following that, there'll be an opportunity to meet the students and discuss their projects in the poster session. We'll also have panel discussions on big data analytics, mobile device security, and SCADA system security, and feature views from academic, government, and industry experts. And on a side note, I will be the moderator for the panel on mobile device security, and I'm looking forward to that. So if you would like more information on speakers and topics, to look at the agenda, and I don't know if you can register anymore for the symposium, but if you're still interested, please come to www.cerias.purdue.edu. And the security seminar for this week is actually tied to the research symposium. And so on April 4th, J.R. Rao from IBM Research will be here to speak. And I'm not sure we're broadcasting it as we normally do, but it will be also held in the Lawson 1142 room since it's part of the symposium. And you can still subscribe to the SIRIUS Security Seminar through the SIRIUS website. Just click on the seminars link at the top of the page.
The next Greater Lafayette Security Professionals meeting will be on April 12th. Currently, Lou Ann Keaton from the Purdue Regional Extension Center will speak about the ISACA organization and the CRISC certification. She was awarded this certification back in January. We also have room on the agenda for another speaker if you're interested. Please contact Keith Watson or Preston Wiley.
Okay, and news updates this time around. Last week, Google released Chrome version 18, which contained new features as well as fixed 3 high and 5 medium-ranked security issues. Adobe Flash updated Flash Player to version 11.2, which fixed 2 critical issues. They also introduced a new feature to their updating utility, which allows users to automatically update Flash instead of prompting them for each update. Opera released version 11.62 to fix 2 high-ranked security issues. And that is the news.
So for this podcast, we're going to do something slightly different. In the past 3 podcasts, we've typically focused on various news articles and had some discussion on that. And so we're going to change it up a little bit this time, and we're going to have a discussion. And this week, we're going to focus specifically on password tools, password management, storage tools. And so one of the things we want to talk about is, why do we need these silly things? And so as an example, probably 6 or 7 years ago, I recall giving several presentations talking about security. And generally at that time, we talked specifically about how to create strong passwords. And that was the primary focus when we talked about passwords and how to do the right thing for those. But as we know, as dealing with a lot more web-based accounts, we have a lot of accounts and a lot of passwords to manage. And we also have advice now, and going ahead a few years from that first presentation on strong passwords, to how do you manage multiple passwords across accounts and why you shouldn't use the same password on all of those accounts. And so now the discussion in the last few presentations I've given have been, let's worry less about strong passwords and use a good password management tool, one that can create the strong passwords for you, but also store them in a secure way. And so that's really what we're going to talk about today. So the question that that we want to look at is, you know, what tools are available to us and how do they work? And so that's some of the discussion for today. So we're going to talk about three in particular. These are not the only three available, certainly, but they're ones that we, that each of the panelists actually use and are very familiar with. And so one of the questions that people may want is, well, my web browser can store passwords, and really, should I do that? So, Mike, what do you think about that? Are web browsers the primary, should we be using those as the primary mechanism for storing passwords? What's good about them? What might not be good about them?
Well, I would say that I would rather someone use a web browser to store a password than write it down and tape it to the back of their monitor, for example. The advantages are that to storing it in a web browser would be that you don't necessarily, you could set a strong password, let your web browser remember it, and then you never have to enter it again. However, one of the projects I support, we use kind of complicated system-generated passwords. These are not things that a typical person would come up with on their own. And I get a call about once a year for a user that uses web browser-based passwords, and they said, well, I got a new computer, and I have no idea what my password is. So that's one of the downfalls that I've seen, is that if you're using it all in your browser and your browser becomes unavailable, you have no access to your password. So it's not necessarily something I recommend, but I look at it versus, I look at a user who uses that method versus someone who's writing them down. The thing I try to discourage people from is writing them down and, you know, taping them to underneath their keyboard and, you know, only using a few. So that's been one of my experiences with the web-based passwords, is that it works really well as long as they have that computer and have access to it. But as soon as they don't, you know, they can't access their account.
Yep. So, yeah, I find that to be a common problem. You know, it's tied to that one computer, that one browser. And even if they use a different browser, if they switch to using Chrome from Firefox, there's some problems possibly trying to get those passwords to work. Although I'm not sure if there's a sync tool that allows you to take. I know you can do that for bookmarks generally, but I don't know if it works for passwords as well. And the other problem that I've seen, and I don't know if you've seen this, Preston, is that if you're going to sync them with your web browser, you have an option to set a master password for those. So my question was always, well, if you're not setting a master password, are they actually encrypted on disk or are they stored in plain text? I don't actually know the answer to that, but whether it's using a system-generated crypto key that's stored locally, unprotected, and the data is encrypted with that key, or if it actually just stores them in plain text. So that's another issue. So ideally, you'd want to use a master password, but not many people are aware of that.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much stores them in plain text on the disk in most cases. I mean, all web browsers have different methods that they use to store the passwords. So, you know, one web browser may encrypt them all the time and one may not. But I think regardless, if you don't set a master password and somebody gets somehow into your computer, they can get your passwords. And I think that's the big problem with not setting a master password.
That, and also, I think, malware being a problem. If the malware is designed to go and look for stored passwords, well, if they're using a particular browser, that's stored in a common location and it's easy to find. So if there's malware out there, that would be another issue. So one good thing, I guess you could say, that kind of addresses Mike's concerns were added in recent versions of Firefox and has been around in Chrome for a couple of releases now, and that's syncing. And so Firefox allows you to sync your data between different Firefox installations. So you can actually create and upload data such as your bookmarks, your preferences, your history files, and it can include your passwords and sync those across browsers. Now, I've done this. It's not exactly easy, but it can be done. And what's on Firefox, it's kind of it generates. You have to add a device, and then it gives you a temporary one-time password sort of deal that you enter into the other device so that it can be authenticated. And so it's kind of a complicated setup. But even more complicated than that is trying to sync with Chrome, because they have multiple passphrases. There's a custom passphrase that's used to encrypt the sync data, and then another passphrase used to do something else. I'm not even sure what it's all for, but I have like two passwords just to do the synchronization part in Chrome. Now, I do not actually sync password data on either Firefox or Chrome. I was more interested in playing with how that worked. But there's actually options in the preferences to say I do not want to sync up password data. So if you want to do it, it's available to you. I'm not sure how safe and secure that is, mainly because there's not a lot of clarity on how that all works. But since it is open source software, we could go and review that. But I haven't done that yet. Anyways, it's on my list. So there are capabilities in at least Firefox and Chrome to do that. Synchronize not just your password data, but also your other data such as bookmarks and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I think what you hit on, though, is it's great when you're sticking with one browser, but if you're going to go between browsers, and actually, you know, I've been a Firefox user for a number of years, and recently I've started using Chrome more, and this is just kind of a perfect example. If I were using this to manage my passwords, I'd be more invested. You know, it's kind of like being chained to that browser. I mean, I can see why the browsers would want to do it, because it kind of gives that loyalty for the user. Hey, I'm managing all my information here, and I've got these passwords. I need to always kind of stay with Firefox. I'm letting them do that. There may be a way to go between browsers. I really doubt it, just because it wouldn't be advantageous for the makers of the browsers to make it easy for you to switch to another browser. But that's to me would be the biggest concern is, again, kind of putting all your eggs in one basket. If you're using your browser for that, you're sort of saying, I'm going to always stay with this browser. I'm going to use it on all of my devices in order to keep that functionality.
Well, Opera also has that feature. It's called Opera Link, and it is simply you create an Opera Link account and you enter it and it syncs your stuff. It's not complicated at all. I actually use it on between my laptops and desktops. So and
is it also yeah. the option for a master password?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Cool. Good. So that's the browser world, at least, for syncing up these passwords. I think the message here that I think I'm hearing is, if you don't have another tool, this is better than nothing, and it's better than writing them down and sticking them to your monitor, which we still find when we do physical audits. Okay, so let's move the discussion now to other tools. And one tool that I've been using for many years now is 1Password. It started out as a Mac-specific password management tool. And since that time, they've added a version for Windows and iOS devices. And there's also an Android and Windows Phone 7 version in beta. And the nice thing about these are that you can use the local file system to store your password data there, or you can use Dropbox as a file store. And if you use Dropbox as a file store, then all your other devices can access the encrypted data in that file system. And then anytime you update that, that gets pushed out to all your other devices. And with the Dropbox API becoming available, even the mobile devices work very well because they can access that API and read the files as needed. And so that works really well. They don't have a Linux version, but they do have an option of a JavaScript-driven interface, if you will, to 1Password called 1Password Anywhere. And what you do is you go into your password, your 1Password data files, and in there you'll find an HTML file. And if you click on that, it loads it up in the browser. And it gives you a similar interface to what you have with the application version. And you'd enter your passphrase to open that. And your data is available to you that way through a JavaScript interface. And so far, everywhere I've used that, it seems to work pretty well. It does give you a read-only interface. You can't actually go in and take advantage of some of the capabilities of editing and updating. But if you need to access that data, that's a good way to do it. They have plugins available that work on Safari, Chrome, and Firefox. Way back in the early years, they also supported some of the other browsers on the Mac, but they focus primarily on those three right now. On the Windows side, I assume they work with Internet Explorer and Safari and Chrome and Firefox, but I'm not actually sure. I don't actually have it installed on the Windows side. They use it. It has a strong password generator, so anytime you need a strong password, you can go in and set the length of it. You can say the number of digits you want to include. Do you want to have any special characters? Various settings for that, which is very nice. Anytime you move the slider to indicate to set the size of the number of characters, it also updates the password itself. So you could slide it back and forth and you get 100 different randomly generated passwords. And I do that just to generate a little bit of entropy and complexity to the password. I don't know if it actually does anything useful, but it kind of looks cool. It has a full screen mode on macOS Lion. You can store not just passwords, you can store notes, credit card information, you can set identities, software licenses, anything. And I use the identities because I have an identity at work, which includes my office address, and I have an identity at home, which is my home address. And then if I'm going to a field and I want to fill it in with that data, I just tell it what identity to use, and it populates those forms for me, which saves a lot of time. Very cool for that. It stores backup copies, so if you goof, you make a mistake, and you've got to go back to a backup, you can do that. It stores any number of those. I think I have mine set to 50, which is probably 49 more than I really need, but it has that capability for you. You can also tag things, stick stuff in folders, so you can organize them however you want. It goes out and it grabs an image of the web page and stores that, so if you forget what the site looks like, there's a little small image of it, so you can remember that. You can search. And it remembers all of your generated passwords. So anytime you generate a new password for a site, but then for whatever reason you're not able to save that account login, you can go back to your history of generated passwords and still log into that site and correct that information. Every once in a while I have to do that because some sites look a little weird and they don't always accept the information the same way that other sites do. So it is a commercial tool. It's about $50. They do have a 30-day trial. And they also have a 5-user family license, and that's about $70. Now, it seems pretty steep. I don't recall paying that much for it, but I would probably pay that much for it now because I found so much good use out of it. So that's 1Password, and that's available at www.agilebits.com. And I think Mike was going to tell us about the tool he uses now.
Yes, and I'll come at it from a little different angle. The tool that I use is PasswordSafe, and this is an open source tool. And actually, Keith introduced me to this tool probably 6 years ago or so. It's been a while. The tool was originally designed by Bruce Schneier, and basically what it was designed to do at that time was to secure your passwords on a Windows device. So that's what it was originally written for, was the Windows platform. Now it does many of the same features that that Keith just described with 1Password. However, it does not do the credit cards. It's not necessarily for that. What it's very good at is creating a path. You know, you can store your passwords in there. You can also have it generate passwords. One of the things I really like about it is you can tell it, you can give it specific rules for different accounts. So you can kind of say, this is my Apple account, and here's the rules for an Apple password. So I want it to be this many characters, and I want to produce something that's, you know, easy to pronounce, but I still want to use a lot of strong characters. So there's a number of different options you can give it to say, create this type of password, which has come in very handy. Being an admin on different types of systems, a lot of times there are some systems that exclude certain characters. So being able to go in and say, generate me a password that'll obey these rules is very nice. So really, I've become so accustomed to this tool that I've really ingrained it in everything I do. And the one password I remember is the password to unlock the safe. And of course, I made that a very strong, very long, complex password. And if I ever forget that one, I'm really toast, because literally hundreds of accounts would become inaccessible to me because I have no idea what their passwords are. And even if I opened it up and looked at it, I wouldn't be able to remember it because it's just a looks like a bunch of garbled information to me. So like I said, this is open source. So the price is right for me. I'm pretty thrifty. So to run Password Safe on Windows, you can just download it for free from passwordsafe.sourceforge.net. Now, in recent years, I've become a Mac user, and I really have to say I love having the MacBook. It's a great operating system, and there's a lot of stuff I can do. But one of the first challenges I had was, how do I get my passwords? I was really frustrated, and I was hurting because I couldn't figure out a way. So I did a little research, and it turns out someone made an application that'll run on the Mac to work with the password safe, and that's called Password Gorilla. And it's also available from the same site. There's links to it where you can get to it from there. So, you know, it kind of cracks me up. Password Gorilla, the icon is great. It's a gorilla with a safe right in the middle. But it works great, and in fact, I've even managed to get my wife to use it on her Mac at home. So that was it's very easy to use interpretation of Password Safe, and again, it was free, so I like that. Now, the last port I had to make was using the iPhone, and I started off with an iPod Touch, so I wanted a way to get my passwords from that. And this was the one piece that I actually ended up paying for. There's an app called PW Safe available that allows you to work with your password safe, and its cost is $1.99. Now, one of the nice things about that is it allows you to access your safe through the cloud, but it also supports Dropbox. And that was a great addition. So what I ended up doing was moving all my safes into Dropbox. So now I can get to them anywhere using any of these devices, which I really, really like. And the one last piece that I just learned of, as I was preparing for this podcast, I went out to the site and I noticed they have YubiKey support now as well. Now, I just tried this the other day, and it worked. You know, it worked really well. Basically, YubiKey gives you the ability to have two-factor authentication in place. And so I set up a new password safe using the YubiKey. So now I not only have to put in my very strong passphrase, but I have to have that YubiKey in my possession as well to unlock the safe. As far as I can tell at this point in time, it's only supported for the Windows version of the safe. But that's just another level of security that it adds. So I've been I've been very pleased with it over the years, and you know, I know there's other ones out there, but having used this all along, I'm pretty content with the way it works. And now I think Preston will provide you some insight to the tool that he uses.
Yes, I use a tool called LastPass. This has a slightly different model than I guess the two tools you use. It uses a central server to store your password database. So essentially you need internet access in order to access your password database. But it encrypts it on-site on your computer before you upload it to the server, so they do not have any access to your passwords or anything like that. The tool for basically using it on your computer is free. It supports Windows, Linux, Mac OS X, and for a slightly additional fee, you can use it on your mobile devices, Android, iOS, Windows Phone, BlackBerry. There's even a web OS version for your HP touchpads and things like that. There's browser plugins available for all the major web browsers, i.e. Chrome, Opera, Safari, Firefox. And there's also a app called LastPass Pocket, which allows you to actually download your password database and use it offline. So you can kind of pull that plug and not have to be connected to the internet. It includes a strong password generator, a secure notes store, and the ability to store different identities. So you can have a home password store and a work password store, and they're somewhat separate, so you can kind of deal with that. And it can also fill out forms, so you can save your home information and your work information, and it can fill out forms for you. And when you make a new account, it will detect that you're making a new account, and it can just auto-generate a password for you, fill in the form, and do that. You can put your sites in groups for easy organization, and you can search them. It doesn't support multiple, like, hierarchy of folders or anything like that. It's just a group, like, you know, common sites or whatever. There's also a utility called LastPass for Apps, which allows you to fill out password dialogues within the operating system itself. I think it only works on Windows. But it is, I mean, Mac has that, their little key store, so I don't know if that utility is really needed on a Mac. It also supports multi-factor authentication through YubiKey, Google Authenticator, one-time passwords, fingerprint, and card readers. Those all require the LastPass Premium to use, and it also allows you to restrict access to your vault to specific mobile devices. When you connect with a mobile device, it'll store its little unique identifier, and you can pick which unique identifiers are allowed to access your LastPass, since mobile devices don't support multi-factor authentication. So it's essentially a way to secure it up. And the premium version costs $1 a month, $12 a year. For that, but otherwise it's free if you just want to use it on your desktop and you don't really care about mobile device support. But if you do, then you get LastPass Premium, you get a ton of features, and you know, it kind of helps support their cause. And that's LastPass.
Cool. Well, it sounds like we highlighted a variety of tools that work on kind of different principles, which is always cool. I always like that. So 1Password started out as a Mac app and then added mobile device and then added Windows device support. Password Safe started out as a Windows thing and then branched out from there, being open source. A lot of other platforms were supported from that. And then LastPass, which kind of seems to have started out as a web-based driven, or maybe not web-based, but at least a remote database type system with apps that then plugged into that for different platforms. So they each have a different evolutionary path, if you will, in their development. So that's kind of cool. The one thing that we didn't really talk about specifically, which Mike mentioned in his discussion, was the idea of, well, I've got this database, and instead of remembering 150 some odd passwords, I just have to remember one, and that is the master password. And so for me, the master password that I use for 1Password is actually a sentence that's unique to me, that only I remember. It's never been written down. And so it's fairly long. And sometimes it's very frustrating when you get, you know, 3/4 of the way through and you mistype. Since it doesn't display anything on the screen, I have to enter that one a few times sometimes to get it right. But that's the one thing with these. They seem to have a master password associated with them. However, LastPass also works with YubiKeys, and then PasswordSafe has that support as well now. And the one that doesn't is 1Password, unfortunately. But, in fact, I just found a blog post from some of the developers at 1Password about why they are not doing it currently. They may in the future, but they're not there yet. So, any other comments on choosing the right passphrase? Because sometimes when I talk to people about passphrase, their definition of what a passphrase is a slightly longer password. And I try to shy away from that and say, well, make it something longer. Make it a sentence, you know, because longer is typically better than shorter and more complex.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I just saw an article that kind of struck me a little bit. I think it was a pastor actually saying to use verses out of the Bible, and it was actually, from what I read, I didn't read it very closely, but I think what was being inferred was that's not a good thing because that's such common information. And I thought, well, okay, you know, the most common verses I could see, but the Bible's a big book, and there's a lot of things in there. And if you're interdispersing, if you're doing some sort of substitution, I like the approach of using a sentence or something meaningful to me. But then I substitute certain characters with other characters. And I think once you mix all that up and you get a good length on it, it becomes really difficult. I think it becomes very difficult for someone to potentially crack that. In fact, I think if you plug it into like Gibson's password tool or something, I mean, it's like millions of years before it could be cracked based on the complexity of it. So, I mean, that's one thing I would recommend. I wouldn't necessarily I trust Steve Gibson to not be taking any information, but I've never actually put my exact passwords, but I've put some things in there that I want to see strength-wise what it shows. And I think he's just using some JavaScript for actually to calculate it and bring it back, and it shows you the effective strength. So, I mean, that's the thing I recommend is make it something meaningful, something you can remember. And I like to change out, you know, I like to add in some characters there. And I know some people have different schools of thought on that. It does make it difficult to remember. And even though I can always remember the phrase, sometimes I get the substitution wrong. And yes, there's a lot of pounding on the keyboard and me going, oh, are you kidding? Really? Really? What's the character? I mean, you can spend a lot of time if you forget that one sequence trying to figure it out.
Right. And probably the one downside to having to type, whether it be a passphrase or a password, is we still have the problem that we have to keep our system secure and malware out, because if somebody were to get a keystroke logger on there, they're still going to get your master passphrase, unfortunately. And so that's one issue that we've not gotten away from yet. I mean, the security of your system is still very important. And these password solutions, while they store those passwords safely and you can access them wherever you need to be, we still have to have some amount of trust in the systems we're using and confidence that we don't have any malware or malicious software or even just bad users watching what we're doing, trying to capture our passwords and passphrases to these password tools. So I don't want anybody out there to say, well, you know, now I'm using this password tool, I don't have to worry about my antivirus subscription. I think that's the wrong approach. We still have to have a strong, safe system, hopefully. Even though we're using, you know, common operating systems here with the usual vulnerabilities and weaknesses, we still have to protect the security of the system itself to make sure that that information that protects our sensitive passwords is not compromised.
Right, and I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all tool. I mean, all three of us use different tools. In fact, I use PasswordSafe also for storing my offline passwords, because LastPass is very good for storing web-based passwords. It'll fill out forms and things like that, but when it comes to actually doing offline stuff, like your passwords for non-web-based tools, it's not the best tool for the job.
No, and another problem is we all have some amount of responsibilities for being system admins. If you're in the data center and you've got to access a password on a device you don't use very often and you don't have your computer in front of you, what do you go to? You go to your mobile device. And if you don't have the password in that system, or if you got to type a super long passphrase just to get to it, it complicates things quite a bit. And so we have some systems that have unique system level passwords that we want to be able to store or keep track of and not keep track in our head necessarily. And those are kind of difficult to deal with at times. And these tools don't necessarily make that easier. They kind of complicate it in some ways. And the example I'm thinking of is if you're in a shop where you've got multiple system admins and you have a shared root or administrative password on a couple systems, and you're at the console and you're trying to fix a problem, you got to pull those passwords out somehow, and it kind of slows you down sometimes. But that's essential, you know, if you want to protect them.
Well, there's no question that these tools have made me more secure. I mean, it's easy to say you should use a different password on every single site you visit, but it's a lot more difficult to do it unless you have a way to store those passwords somewhere. So I do that now, but I will say before I had a password storage manager, I didn't do that. I had a few passwords I used based on the security level of the sites I visited, but you know, there's it's impossible to remember hundreds upon hundreds of passwords for various sites, especially strong passwords.
Absolutely. So one of the advantages to having a password tool available is that you can store hundreds of accounts. And so, for example, I'm looking at my 1Password list here, and I have 176 accounts with unique passwords saved. And so the webmaster of Sirius, former webmaster at Sirius, a friend of mine, he had over 700 accounts saved in 1Password more than 3 years ago. And given that he does a lot of client work, or he did at that time, I suspect that number's probably tripled by now. So these tools can store a lot of information and help you find it quickly, because there's a search utility built in and you can organize them into folders and tags and all that. So one of the things that's a side effect of this is I don't hesitate when it comes to new online services that have a trial or beta or something interesting that they might be doing. I'll go ahead and sign up an account for those, and I'll give it a unique password. And maybe some of the accounts that I've saved in here over the years, stuff I don't even use anymore, those services have disappeared by now. But since I didn't use the same password on that service that I used on any other services, if the account goes away, it's no big deal. If that account were to be or that service were to be compromised in some way, I'd not worry that the password I saved there is going to be used to exploit my other accounts, because it's not the same password. And so I don't have to remember those details like that. In fact, if you go to I can't think of the database name, but it lists all the compromised accounts for various web services that have been collected over the years. And if you go in there and you find that one of your accounts was compromised, you have at least some confidence that that password that may have been compromised for that account can't be used to access any of your other accounts. So this empowers you to try out new services, create unique accounts, create unique passwords for those, and not worry about it later if that service were compromised and that password used in some way, because it doesn't. It was only for that one account. And so that's a unique thing. I don't have to sit there and go, well, you know, I could create an account and I'd have to do a password. I'd have to remember it. I don't even worry about that anymore. I just, I'll try it out. Read the terms of service, of course, read the privacy policy. But hey, if you want to try it out, just create an account, create a unique password. I'm putting in 25 characters of password now, so I don't even worry about it anymore. I worry more about the spam I might get from the service, but at least I can filter that out at least. So that's one unique advantage to having these tools, I think.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I was like Preston when I first started using the safe. I probably had 3 or 4 different passwords for accounts that I had different levels to, and now I've got essentially uniqueness across all accounts. And every new account, you know, You just have to go to the safe and say, give me a new password. You know, I generate the password, then I plug it into the new site. And like I said, I never even look at it again, never even think about it. One thing I was curious about is, as we talk about passwords, you know, there's a school of thought of how often you should change your password. And of course, on these sites, the password saves themselves make it easy. You know, you can certainly generate a new password. You can even tell it, you know, to archive your old password if you'd like to. But what I'm really curious about is the master password. What are your thoughts on changing the master password? If you come up with something long and that you can remember and you feel it's fairly secure, are there advantages to changing it? Or are there disadvantages to changing it?
Well, I think the disadvantage to changing it is that you forget the new one. That's always a potential problem. And this is critical because if you lose that master password, you lose access to all the other passwords you have in your system. Now, there are ways in 1Password, for example, to print out your passwords, for example. So if I wanted to save a hard copy of those and put them in my safe deposit box, I can do that. But changing your master password could be a good idea if you know your system's been compromised. If you know there were spyware on your system or keyloggers or something like that could have captured your master passphrase and your password files, then changing your master password should be something you think long and hard about and probably do. And it maybe as a good practice, it might be a good idea to change that. Maybe not as frequently as you're required to on some systems that have a password expiration, but something that definitely should be considered. So that'd be my thought on it.
I completely agree.
Great.
Yeah. Well, I was just sitting here thinking about that and thinking about the obviously you have to have access to the source file. And I'm thinking password safe here. You'd have to have access to that. But one of the thought that occurred to me was if you were to change it often and they're doing a brute force attack kind of against it and they're able to get different versions of your safe, then you're giving them more opportunities in a sense. It's sort of a little bit backwards of, I guess, of the normal convention, because if for some reason somebody were able to get access to different versions of your safe and you used multiple passwords, then you're actually kind of multiplying the chances of them actually being able to hit upon one that would work. I don't know if that logic holds up or not, but that's just one thing that occurred to me, that the more often you change it, you know, the more often. And if they actually were able to get versions of the safe to try that attack against and brute force against it. So I'm not sure, you know, what the best recommendations are on it. Obviously, if you think you have malware, it's a good idea to change it. But, you know, I don't know if there's a specific, you know, you should change it every year, you should change it every 2 years, you should change it every month. I'm not sure the advantages outweigh the disadvantages in that scenario, at least in my opinion.
I don't know of any password storage utility malware yet, but that's not to say it isn't out there. And so they would have to compromise not just your master passphrase, but like you said, access to the data files itself. So I haven't heard of anything. Not to say it wouldn't be out there or is right now, but something to keep in mind, certainly. So I think we've kind of covered this. One of the things that, like I said, in the past we talked about creating strong passwords for all your accounts, but then we never said anything about how you keep track of those, because the security guys always goes, oh, you got to have strong passwords on all your accounts and they got to be unique, but then we never provided a solution to anybody to actually do that in a way that they could actually remember stuff or at least save stuff in a way that was still safe. And I think these password tools, while not complete solution, provide a better solution than trying to use the same password on all accounts or to do other silly storage mechanisms, some of which I would describe how my wife stored passwords, but they're so unsafe I won't recommend those. Thankfully, I got her to use 1Password now in her system, and so she's moving along in a better direction. But that's probably the biggest thing is getting let's say, naive users or users that are not technically savvy to understand the purpose of the tool, first of all, and then understand how to use the tool effectively. And I'm not sure that my wife, as an example, is there yet on the effective use, but she's at least using a tool in a way, and she understands the point of using it now. So now it's just kind of helping her along when she hits a site and the password stuff doesn't save correctly. So I think it's possible, especially with 1Password being fairly user-friendly, let's say, that helps move some people along into using these tools. So hopefully that will help spawn some further use of them.
Well, yeah, I agree totally with your point. I think all three of the tools that we've discussed are very easy to use tools. And my experience has been the feedback I've received is that people were not using strong passwords until they started using a tool like this in their life. You know, they said things got easier. Even though now they're so much more secure, their accounts are using unique passwords, the feedback I'm getting is I only have to remember 1Password, you know, and everything else, it's taken care of for me. I mean, I think if nothing else, it's just sort of like try it out. That's been how I've been able to persuade people by saying, just try it out. It'll actually make things easier. I'm like, just give it a try. If nothing else, even if you're not willing to use the strong passwords it's generating, just use it. Store your current passwords in there. It's one place for all your current passwords. And 9 times out of 10, people come back to me and say, oh, I'm using the generate password feature, and it's great. I love it. So, you know, if nothing else, even if you're like, you know, I don't buy into all this, okay, it's a password management tool, and it makes your life easier. It's far more effective than keeping them in an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah, and the advantage is, I think with all the tools, they all have a free trial or at least a low-cost option, especially if they're open source, so that you can actually give them a whirl, see how they work for you, and see if you can fit it into the way you use the web and other online services. So.
Yep, and I agree. So
good. So everybody should be using a password storage tool of some sort. Doesn't matter what.
Yes, the one trick I think is you need to make that master password very strong.
Yes, that's probably the biggest thing to keep in mind with them.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, I think we've discussed this at great length, and I appreciate all the comments and feedback on that. So.
All right, well, that wraps up the podcast. I wanted to thank Keith Watson and Mike Hill, as well as Sirius. I'm Preston Wiley. Have a safe and secure day.